Welcome to season two of the Give Yourself the Chat podcast. My name is Peter Lewis and I'll be your host on the show that's dedicated to helping you find the inner strength and disciplined habits to live a life of high performance. Well, in today's episode, I'd like to talk about a journey that a lot of people experience in their lives. And coming from the video game sector where I've spent the last 3 years working in the C-suite, this industry is feeling it particularly at the moment, and this is the subject of redundancy. And having been made redundant at time of recording about a month ago, I just want to talk about my experience and how redundancy is the path to resilience. And if there's ever a time where I've had to apply the give yourself the chat mantra or philosophy or mindset, it's during this last difficult month or so. And in order to reflect upon this, I thought I'd talk through a model called the change curve, and it's there by Kubler and Ross. It's sometimes called the grief curve, but let's call it the change curve, because I think that makes it far more applicable. And if you're listening to this, you would have gone through this change curve at some point in your life. It may not be linked to redundancy or job loss. It may be something that's happened in your life, which can be quite traumatic. And I think redundancy is quite a traumatic thing to go through, particularly if you weren't expecting it, and particularly if that whole situation isn't handled particularly well by your employer. And if you come out of the other side of it exposed financially or in a place of peril because you no longer have that regular income coming into your bank account every month. Now, I appreciate everyone's situation is different and everyone will handle this in different ways. But reflecting on the Kubler-Ross change curve, I think has helped me make sense of what has gone on. It's allowed me to accept the feelings that have sort of ebbed and flowed during this last month or so. And I think it's that acceptance rather than the sort of denial, and I guess this is part of the change curve process, is a really important thing. But also the opportunity to reflect upon it and then in a sort of stoic tradition think, okay, if it's going to be, it's down to me. So what is it that I need to be doing at this moment that's within my control so I can shape my future destiny, if you like? Now, everyone that goes through redundancy or these kind of traumatic professional life events, well, comes out of it the other side, but I think everyone comes out of it a different person. And already I can reflect on how I am approaching things differently by taking ownership of the situation. So this episode isn't about really my specific ins and outs of why I was made redundant. That's not really of interest to you. I think the point of which I found out about redundancy and where I am now hopefully will help you, if you're going through a similar situation, make sense of it. But equally, it's a jumping off point to think about how we handle these things from an emotional, spiritual, psychological, physical way, and how we can give ourselves the chats that we need along the way. And sometimes those chats are chats of compassion, and sometimes those sort of internal chats are ones where you have to act like your own sort of boot camp sergeant major or drill instructor and sort of get yourself going through just very blunt, coarse language with yourself. And other times those chats are chats of gratitude, and sometimes those chats are chats of celebration and acknowledgement of the journey that you're on. So audibly, I'm going to have to describe the Kubler-Ross change curve. Those of you that are watching on my YouTube channel will be able to see this on screen. But I want to imagine an X and Y axis. And for those of you who remember at school, your X axis is along the bottom, and the y-axis is going up the page, if you imagine that in your mind's eye. So on the x-axis, we've got the passage of time. From, let's say, from the moment you're told about redundancy through to whatever given moment that you are reflecting upon this. So we have time on the x-axis, and on the y-axis, we have your level of morale. I guess also that could be optimism or energy or happiness or but The version of the Kubler-Ross change curve I'm looking at right now has morale as the y-axis. And then there's a sort of up and down relationship between morale and time through the curve, and it is like a sort of like a sine wave curve, and broken down into sort of three distinct phases. And all models are wrong. There's some are useful. So the utility of all models is to take your given situation and reflect upon it, and what it allows you to kind of discuss in your mind's eye or with close confidence. It's the model would never ever say, this is how it is, this is how it always is. And I think people sometimes get academic and theoretical models a little bit wrapped around because they look for one instance where the model isn't true and go, ha, the model's broken. No, all models are wrong. As I think the statistician George Blocks said, all models are wrong. We have to accept that. Where the model has utility is, how does it inform the discussion? How does it help shape our thinking? And it's the utility of models that are either high utility or low utility. So it's up to you to decide how much utility or value you get from a model. No model's ever saying, hey, I've got this sussed that, you know, it plays out like this. But the Kubler-Ross model has three sort of phases. The first phase is what they call sort of shock denial, which then goes into the phases of frustration and depression. And in your mind's eye, picture the curve going up with shock and denial, almost like peaking, and then troughing into frustration and depression. And then emerging out of that through a sort of decision-making and acceptance phase. And the acceptance phase and the model I'm presenting here talks about decisions and integration. And I guess it's the integration of new experiences, integration of new context, integration of decisions that you are making in order to move yourself on. And all these, throughout the entire sort of change curve, are chats with ourselves. You know, this is called Give Yourselves a Chat. This podcast is all about how do we step into our circle of control, as the Stoics might describe. How do we become proactive, as Stephen Covey might describe it? They're all saying the same things, really, is that, okay, events are happening to you, and whilst you can't necessarily control the events happening to you, we can control 100% how we internalize and how we think and what we say and do as a consequence of those events happening to us. So that external stimuli, we go internal and we decide what we can do. So looking back onto my own journey, so just a little bit of context, I was a chief people officer of an entertainment group based in the video games industry. I'd never had any experience of operating as C-suite, apart from a little dalliance with being a chief learning officer at a studio a few years back. But this was kind of new for me. I spent my life in learning and development, and I was a professional engineer. But I saw this as an opportunity to sort of step up and do some learning, which I did. I did a level 7 qualification to learn about the role and how chief people officers have to operate. And there's one thing at the C-suite you have to understand is that you have to really sort of have this sort of broad, you're a specialist, you know, might be a specialist in finance, you might be a specialist in people, but you need to be able to think across the entire business. And so this was great learning for me. And for the last 3 years, that's what I was doing. And for one reason or another, you know, it didn't work out for us as a group. We had to close several of our companies. And as a result, if you're closing companies and shrinking a group down, you don't really need that sort of C-suite to be so top-heavy, because actually what you're left with, and in many cases a sort of skeleton business, just needs a sort of skeleton crew to keep the lights on. So I was informed of my redundancy, and I guess some of it wasn't a surprise, because I knew what, you know, the mood music was about closing some of our companies. I guess I was kind of shocked at how it happened so quickly and how it was delivered to me. And again, I won't go into the details of that. But straight away, in terms of the Kubler-Ross curve, my morale actually went up a little bit, because we'd been facing a pretty dire situation over the previous 6 months. And so it was a sense of relief to be told, you don't have to do this anymore, Peter. You know, go on gardening leave and we'll sort out the settlement and everything else like this. So initially I can see, looking at the graph, how it peaks up, because it was almost like, oh, thank goodness, I don't need to do that anymore, because that was quite a stressful period of everyone's life, really. But I guess there was also this, you know, looking for evidence that it wasn't true, thinking, actually, you know, was this my fault or not? No, surely it can't be. And so I recognised some of the sort of shock and denial, even though there was that initial sense of relief. I feel that actually over the next course of the next couple of days, there was almost like this denial that's happening and they might change their mind and actually we're reconfiguring things, so come back next week sort of thing. So I see an element of that, but I think the overriding sense was, yeah, perhaps that role wasn't for me. I didn't really enjoy the last 6 months of it. I feel quite relieved. And then the Kubler-Ross change curve kind of hits, and that might be, so if you're going through redundancy, that might be a sort of similar experience to you, but then you get this phase of frustration and a sense of anger that actually, no, I felt I did a good job. And let's face it, I mean, just back it up a little bit. You're being made redundant, but you can't help feeling that actually somehow this is your fault or somehow you've just been sacked and people just haven't had the chops to have that feedback with you. So you kind of start to get angry about, well, hang on, why didn't we kind of work this out? Why didn't we get a sense of doing things differently? And then through one reason or another, perhaps communication channels break down or you're left feeling a little bit isolated and you become even more frustrated. And you can very quickly see how people can sort of sink into that sort of depressive low slump on the change curve, feeling overwhelmed because now we're sort of accepting that this is real. We're accepting that we are no longer in a job and we're starting to feel overwhelmed by, okay, it's a tough labor market out there. What do I do next? I've got bills to pay. We've got mortgages. We've got kids to feed. All these things that you're going through. And depending on how much you feel that depression depends how long you stay in this state. Now, for me, again, without going too much into my personal detail, I wasn't left with anything to give me a financial buffer. So in that sort of stoic sense, it's like I can stay in this sort of depressive slump. And, you know, my family will tell you that, you know, it was a bit hard to live with at times. My energies were up and down. One minute I was high and then the next minute I was low. And it becomes really quite hard and challenging for the people around you. But I realized that actually I have to get out of this sort of slump because I've got to bring some money in. And my wife is in a full-paid job. She's a teacher, but most of you know that teachers aren't paid a great deal. We have a couple of children going through university at the same time, so that's quite a financial burden and overlap. So this became a driving force for me and a motivating force to try and lift myself out of that. And then you kind of come onto this phase of acceptance in the change curve. And one of the things I found myself thinking about straight away was, okay, what can I do right now? What can I get involved in? Who can I contact? And I went through that first couple of weeks of being made redundant or told I was being let go. I must have put in something like 10 different coffee meetings with people I'd connected with, worked with in the past, just to get something going really quickly. But the danger here is, and if you're going through redundancy as well, the danger here is that we try to latch on the first thing that feels familiar, feels like it might lead somewhere, and it might be applying for jobs that we're familiar with or we've done in the past, or it might be some business idea. You think, oh, I'm going to get going with that because I can get going quickly because we need to get money in. So there's this sort of existential threat that we feel that we have to do something quickly and do it right now. But actually, it dawned on me, we have a bit of an opportunity here. Now, everyone's financial situation is very different. Those that are facing a real existential threat can't be too choosy and often will just have to get a job somewhere to bring the money in. Now, whilst I didn't get any sort of financial payout, you know, I do have, my wife is in full-time employment and we've got one or two, you know, pots of savings that we can dip into. But I do appreciate everyone's is different. And it just dawned on me that I'm leaping really quickly into what things that felt familiar and felt I could do right now and started to hustle around that, which was great because it kind of lifted me out of this depressive slump, but also sensed the danger of jumping on things which actually in the long run might not pay off for me. And I think this is the word of caution. If you're going through redundancy, it's very easy to, and you could be too eager to jump on the first thing and start applying for jobs that felt very similar to you in the past. But you do have an opportunity here. You have an opportunity to to reset and take some time to think about what do I really want, and how much time you have to reflect depends on that sort of financial buffer and the bills that you have to pay. Okay, so I'm not dismissing that at all. And for me, it was, okay, I'm now 53. I was rather hoping that job would have taken me through to retirement, but it hasn't. What do I do now? And it was an inflection point about, okay, what did I really enjoy over the last 3 years? What didn't I enjoy? And a blank sheet of paper to work out, you know, two lists. What do I really enjoy? What were the elements? Why did I enjoy them? And what didn't I enjoy? And what I don't want to do? And when you start writing it down on a piece of paper, it becomes really quite clear where the heat map is and where the commonalities of, you know, I don't enjoy this, but I do enjoy that. And they tend to be inverse or opposites or elements of both. And for me, it was an opportunity to think, okay, do I go into another professional employment role? Or do I set myself up in business and take the experience I've had and think about how I might add value to a potential customer or client? Now, one feels safer than the other. Going into employment feels far safer than going it alone. And there is a lead lag here, but they both have lead lag. You know, if you're going into employment, you've got to apply for jobs, you've got to go through interviews, and that can take up to 6 to 8 months or so. Similarly, if you're going to start off in business, there is a lead and lag, and it can take 6, 12, 18 months before you see any sort of significant revenue coming in. So they're both not without their risks. But if you can hold your breath long enough, one will pay off for you better than the other. And it might be the employment job route. It might be the self-employment sort of business route. For me, it was the self-employment solopreneur route. Prior to employment, I had been operating as an independent trainer, coach and consultant. So I knew what that felt like. But instead of rushing straight back into that, I couldn't just dial up my old clients because I'd sold my client book to a business associate of mine. So I'm having to start from scratch. But equally, I'm not sure that I wanted to go back into what I did before, because the reason I went into employment was because I was feeling burnt out and I really fell out of love with the previous business I was in. So I didn't want to recreate those situations. But by taking a blank piece of paper and working out what I like and what I don't like, and it also allowed me that opportunity to think about, okay, well, if I was to start again, how would I design it? And one of the factors I found is that previously working in a sort of more traditional person-to-person live type of environment, I was limited by there's only one of me and I've only got a finite amount of time. This time I'm thinking, okay, how do I solve that equation? How do I scale my time and my effect? And most of that is through scaling through technology. I don't want to scale a business with employees and associates. I want to scale the effect of my time. And one way to do that is through technology, and particularly online, where you can do one to many, or you can pre-record things and sell courses and what have you. And I've always been a bit of a geek and a tech nerd around that. And I love building that stuff. I love content creation. So I've decided, in the ripe old age of 53, approaching 54, is that I'm going to go back into bootstrapping a business, getting myself up and running and seeing what I can build quickly. And I've decided to document it and start a YouTube channel. And I'm continuing with my pre-existing podcast. And I'm building a coaching business that hopes to scale through technology. So I am now back to the Kubler-Ross diagram. I'm now on that acceptance phase. I've experimented with ideas of what I like to do. I was flirting with the idea of becoming an HR professional and going looking for HR jobs. I was flirting with being an interim professional or fractional professional. But actually, I want to go into sort of coaching and less training, more about coaching, and particularly coaching leveraging technology. So I've started, in terms of the Kubler-Ross change curve, to accept and make some decisions and integrating the experience I've had being made redundant, but the experience I've had of the last 3 years as a C-suite professional, and thinking, I've got an opportunity here. I don't have much time on my side money-wise, but I know that in a year, 2 years' time, if I get this right now, the payoff will be worth it in terms of the lifestyle, the degree of agency I have, and hopefully the income as well. But it comes at a risk, and it comes at a cost. In the same way, applying for a job comes at a risk, comes at a cost. Now, so that's my journey through the change curve. There's some other things I'm learning here as well. One is the support of those around you, your loved ones, is absolutely vital. You've got to talk with them about how you're feeling, because they're going to feel the effects of the change curve, whether you recognize it or not. They're going to notice when you are high and exuberant. They're also going to know when you're crashing with your depressive lows as well. So the people around you are experiencing this change curve as well. Make sure you acknowledge that. Make sure you thank them and bring them into your thoughts. Bring them into your conversations. And I found that's really helped for me. Another thing that's really helped in dealing with this is the support of my community online. Now, I don't have a big following, but on LinkedIn, having been a professional, you know, for the last 20, 30 years or so, and I appreciate LinkedIn hasn't been around that long, but I've got a network of people there. And if you tell them what you're going through, then it's amazing how many cheerleaders will come out of the woodwork and back you. And whilst that might not lead to a job or it might not lead to a business, what I can say with certainty is if you don't start to use these kind of resources, it will never lead to business and it will never lead to a job. So it's worth doing. And also it gives you something to do that feels proactive and it feels that you're taking charge of your situation. So there's the loved ones element, there's your friends element, but there's also this sort of social community element. And particularly because I'm talking about in a professional sense, LinkedIn is very important for that. And the third thing I think I want to reflect upon in this episode is really, despite the fact that I am getting on in years and I'm kind of over halfway, so to speak, there's still plenty of life left in me yet. And for anyone who is in a similar situation to me, who's, you know, so Generation X in their late 40s, early 50s, it might feel really tough being made redundant. It might feel tough in that job market because, let's face it, ageism is still out there and alive and well. But it's never too late to really kind of go at these things. And we might have to reduce our expectations on salary and position. But it's certainly never too late to start a business. It's certainly never too late to learn new skills. And the barriers to entry are so much lower now through the leveraging of technology, getting our message out there through whatever mechanism it might be. And this is why I've started my YouTube channel, in order to help people like myself at this particular phase of our life make sense of these kind of life-changing decisions or these pivot points that we face. And you don't even have to be made redundant to think of these pivot points, because, you know, with children going off to university and fleeing the nest, these become natural inflection points for change. And so I'm throwing myself into documenting my journey on YouTube as well. Now, at time of recording, none of this has yielded any sort of future jobs or appointments, but I'm getting plenty of conversations and I feel confident about my future. So back to the Kubler-Ross diagram, I'm now in that sort of latter part, that latter third of the model. Time has gone on. I've gone through shock and denial, frustration and depression. And now I firmly feel that I'm in my circle of control and I'm doing things that shape the future, because I've taken some time to understand what is it I want, what's my why, what's going to get me excited, what can I talk about, what value can I add to the world, and what, you know, what's the world prepared to pay for that? And so there's an intersection of all those things, but I feel really confident about the future. So if you're listening to this and you've been made redundant, take it from me, there is hope, but we have to build that hope ourselves. We have to give ourselves that chat. But that chat, as I said, doesn't have to always be the boot camp sergeant major, pull ourselves up. It can be a compassionate chat. It can be a gratitude chat. But it just needs to be a chat with self, but also with those around you. And it takes a team to make a successful person. So lean into your team, lean into your network. And I wish you well if you're dealing with redundancy. You know, keep going, keep engaging with positivity, and more importantly, think about this as an opportunity to design the future that you want. So I hope you found this useful, and I'd be really interested to hear what your journey is like, and please share this with anyone that you know is facing a similar situation. We're not alone. There's plenty of people out there facing this. Let's go and talk to each other. Let's support each other through this difficult time. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Give Yourself the Chat podcast. I hope you enjoyed this one. Please feel free to explore the back catalogue of some fascinating guests I've had on the show. And if you'd like to suggest somebody that you know that would be a great fit and has got a wonderful story to tell, then please do get in touch. But in the meantime, I hope you find the inner strength and the discipline habits to live a life of high performance.